Welcome on in, Browns fans, to another episode of the Dog Check Podcast, part of the Bleed Network Podcast, and also airing on a television set near you across the great state of Ohio. I'm Spencer German alongside Eric Metcalf, Browns legend. You know him, you love him, and we love having him on the show, breaking things down on the Cleveland Browns front. We do want to, as always, remind you that this show is brought to you by our friends at BetOnline, which continues to be the world's most trusted betting platform and your number one source for online betting in the year 2025. Whether you're a seasoned fan or a first-time bettor, BetOnline is your ultimate game day companion with the largest selection of odds and everything from football, the NBA, college basketball, to NHL and UFC. BetOnline is the number one sports betting source for the new year. From touchdowns to three-pointers to hat tricks, BetOnline has you covered each and every single game, every play, and every win. BetOnline, the game starts here, and plenty to discuss in what feels like it's been sort of a busy week already for the Browns, as they continue to search for their offensive coordinator, as the day to declare for the NFL draft comes and goes this week, except for the two teams playing the national championship game. But we won't talk about that because I know it's a sensitive subject for you, Eric.
Yes, it is. But it's okay. It's okay. I guess we played good enough football to win, but didn't come out with the victory. I figured we felt like whoever won that game was going to be the national champion. So it was two good teams going at it. And unfortunately for my Longhorns, we didn't get it done.
I think what's good for the Longhorns, though, Eric, is, you know, there was all these years where people wanted to declare that Texas was back, and they were totally wrong. And I think we can definitively say now that Texas is back. I think Coach Sarkisian has that team trending in the right direction, two straight years of being in the Final Four. And I do think, like, the sky's the limit. I mean, they're a blue blood brand. Like, I think they're built to last now. I think they have the right coach. They got, you know, you get the Arch Manning experience next year. So that should be fun for your Longhorns.
Yeah, I think they're back. And I mean, I think moving into the SEC helped get them back, because now you have kids who wanted to play in the SEC from Texas are able to stay in there at Texas without having to go just to A&M, you know. So our brand's bigger than A&M. And so they get to stay in Texas and still be in the SEC. And I think that's what a lot of kids are doing. So Sark has done a great job of being able to keep the in-state kids at home.
Yeah, certainly a lot to still look forward to for your Texas Longhorns in the future years. But obviously,
in fact, we're already picked to win it next year.
Oh, are they the favorite right now to win it? Okay. Well, that makes sense. I mean, listen, Ohio State's going to lose a ton of people. So I don't mean to turn this into a college football Ohio State Texas podcast. But yeah, I mean, Ohio State's got so many seniors and it's an upperclassman laden team. So that makes some sense that, you know, that Texas is sort of slotted in as a team that has a good shot. I'm sure Oregon's up there as well. But certainly a lot of good stuff going on in college football, and obviously all of us here in Ohio are happy that we get to see a winning football team instead of what we had to watch for the Browns this year. But Eric, along those lines, there's been, I feel like, a very hotly contested debate going on over the last week or so over just what the Browns should do with that number two overall pick. And some fans are sort of inclined to say, well, you got to take a quarterback no matter what. I'm sort of more reserved, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, and I think we can have some good banter on this as well. Like, I'm sort of reserved to this idea that, like, listen, I get the quarterback position is your biggest need. It's the most important position on the field. Fine. But I also can't, like, a team operating from a place of desperation where they're just going to take somebody, that's never a good place to be. Like, you never want to see an organization operate that way where they're like, well, we're just going to take a quarterback because we think we need one. For me, it's about the evaluation process. If they evaluate these guys and they, so let's just say hypothetically, they come away and they're like, we really like Shedeur Sanders. We really like Cam Ward. We think either of those guys could be, you know, a star in our offense and is a fit for us. Okay. Then I can wrap my head around you drafting one of those guys. But if they come away from this thing and maybe they only like Shedeur Sanders and then he gets taken number one. Okay. Then if you take Cam Ward number two, you're basically conceding from the jump, Eric, that you're settling for a quarterback that you don't even necessarily think is the right fit for you. And I just don't know that that's a good place to be if you're the Browns, who are trying to sort of rebuild this thing and get things going on the right track.
I agree with you 100%.
Thank you.
If you're number two and you can't get the one you want, you need to do something different. Because then, like you said, you're just settling. You're going into a marriage with a woman you don't even really want, right? Right?
Yeah.
You're just settling. And so I'm completely with you on this one. So it all goes down to who do they really like for their system based on who's going to call the plays, but based on what we're going to try to do with our offense again in search of our identity. Who is that guy? And if he's not there, then I think you need to move that pick and get something that you can use to make your team better.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, people are having a hard time. Some people, I don't want to say it's all Browns fans, but I think there is a contingent of Browns fans who are having a hard time understanding, like, why would you trade back when you have the opportunity? Like, you might not be up here again to draft a quarterback. And I get that logic, but you also just can't take one to take one because you're in that spot. Like, this class has already sort of been graded as not being this amazing class. There's, again, maybe the only the two guys that everyone's really, really high on. And, you know, speaking of your Texas Longhorns, like, maybe there's a path towards getting like a Quinn Ewers in the second round or something that the Browns would be positioned to maybe do something like that. And they can still get a rookie that you might feel good about. But again, you can't just reach and get one because you think that it just to address a need. Like, if there's players that you have graded higher, you got to pull the trigger on those guys. Or if you trade back, like you alluded to, which I think is a smart decision. If your quarterback isn't there, then that gives you a chance to maybe draft two potential first round players and set yourself up to, you know, address two bigger needs with players that you might feel better about. Like, you can't operate from this world, Eric, where it's like, well, hey, I'm just going to draft I'm going to reach on something because we need it. Like, you got to think about like what's best for the team. And I understand, like, Andrew Berry's got a lot of pressure on him going into 2025. His job is on the line. Kevin Stefanski's job probably on the line as well. And they have yet to identify that franchise quarterback that they've sort of handpicked. You know, they tried with Deshaun. I think that ship has obviously sailed with the news from on Friday about his Achilles injury and how he re-injured it. They can't, you know, they can't sit there and wallow in that and be like, well, because of this, now they can't be so reactionary that they're just going to be, because of this, now we have to do this. You still got to think about building this team smartly.
Right. And like I said, like, if you don't get the guy you want, then you might as well trade back. That's why I kind of wish that we would have stayed in that 5-6 range before it all went down and teams started losing or actually winning games. I wish we'd have stayed there because then it's kind of easier to decide what you can do with that spot and what you should do. But, you know, it's a tough situation because, like we said, If Cam Ward is your guy, we're just hypothetically speaking, if Cam Ward is your guy and the Tennessee Titans take him, you just take Shedeur, like you said, take Shedeur just because, even if he's not your guy, even if you don't think he can fit in your system. That's what makes it hard about this situation. The fans look at it as we need a quarterback because of Deshaun's situation, because we don't have anybody right now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we have to build this roster again. This roster is aging. People don't understand this roster is aging. So on a lot of different positions, guys are getting old and guys are starting to retire. And so you also have to replace these guys also. So if you're able to trade back and start building, say, the front four on both sides or those type of players, then you're making your team better. And you don't necessarily have to go get that quarterback, like you said, who is a first pick. You can get somebody later in the rounds, say a Tom Brady, and build your team to make them look good.
I'm glad you brought up the point about, you know, sort of building the team in general, their aging roster, trying to get young at certain positions, because, like, I do think that is why, Eric, the Browns are in a win-win situation no matter what. They're either going to sit at two, and the quarterback that they like will be there, or a quarterback they like will be there, and they'll take one. And they'll, you know, inject some life into this fan base, have everybody excited because they'll feel they've identified the quarterback that is going to work for them. Or they trade back. And like you said, maybe they're able to address multiple needs. Maybe they're able to get like a Kelvin Banks Jr. and get yourself a left tackle from your alma mater, Texas. Maybe they're able to get an Abdul Carter. Maybe they're able to like, if they can address multiple needs, multiple positions, that accomplishes, I think, it's all working towards the same goal. And I think the hard thing people are having, I think the thing that's hard for people, Eric, is when you tell them, like, well, you can't just draft a quarterback to draft a quarterback. Then they want to hear, like, okay, well, what are the options? Like, what are we doing at that position regardless? And I get it. Like, if you're hearing the options that are out there and you're like, well, none of those sound really that great to me, and this doesn't sound like it's going to be much of a viable situation, I understand why fans feel that way. You know, I'm not necessarily saying Kirk Cousins is going to like turn back the clock 5 years to be in that version of Kirk Cousins. But if that's the route they go, I can at least buy into why they're making a move like that with the history he has with Kevin Stefanski. And you're just going to have to kind of roll with it and see what you can do. And then I think the other part of this too is like, well, you're only going to be up here so many times with a chance to draft a quarterback in the top three. But I think if you trade back, like we alluded to, that may net you a second first round pick next year. And then that allows you to potentially make a big move up the board next year to land a quarterback if you like next year's quarterback class better. Like maybe they Arch Manning is going to be tough because you basically got to thread the needle and be the number one overall pick if he's going to come out. Drew Aller maybe though is a guy that they like, and that could be something where like, hey, maybe we can get him at like five, and if we can get up to five. So I just think like you can't build your team again out of desperation. That's something that bad organizations do. And if fans are upset about the options of quarterback that are out there, if you don't take a rookie in the top two, I get it. But this is kind of the situation that they're in right now. And to me, if they just kind of tread water at quarterback and build a roster around them successfully, I think that's still a win, even if it's not getting the quarterback that some of these fans might like.
Yeah, I'm not a GM, but that's the route I would take if you're not getting the guy you want. Because once you get one of these guys, if you take one at the second pick, then who's going to protect him?
Yeah.
Who's going to protect him? Who's he throwing to? Who's going to hand off to? What are we doing? So it still makes it hard. So he ends
still
up.
Need a left ta- yeah, you still need yeah. a left tackle.
He
yeah.
still he might end up looking bad as, say, Bryce Young. People thought he was a bust because of his team. He was the first pick, and look how they thought he was a bust and wasn't going to do anything. But who was there to protect him? Who was he playing with? Right? Yeah. So it makes it hard on these guys. Whereas if you can build a team inside out, then you have the potential to play with a guy who's not a top two quarterback, but a guy who can just go in there and do his job, and you can still win games.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. Speaking of some of the veteran options out there, Eric, I officially crossed one off my list. I think you know where I'm going with this.
I know you have.
The last 2 weeks of the season did not go well for the Minnesota Vikings, and they did not go well for Sam Darnold. He struggled in that game against the Lions. He struggled against the Rams and on wild card weekend, or I guess it was Monday night of wild card weekend. He had the two turnovers, the pick and the fumble that the Rams returned for a touchdown. And he looked like the guy from the Jets that just couldn't process the field very well, held the ball too long, and was, you know, accident prone. I thought it was interesting that after the game, Kevin O'Connell, the quote that he gave about Sam Darnold kind of suggested like, we might not have him back next year, which was kind of a, like, kind of, you know, not red flags, but like, it you know, perks your ears up a little bit. Like, oh, he's saying this right after the game. Cause he said something along the lines of like, yeah, we appreciate everything Sam gave us this year. It just didn't work out at the end. Like almost like, yeah, that's it for that. So it does sound like he might be available and the Vikings are going to sort of pivot to the guy they drafted this past year in JJ McCarthy. But I don't know if I'm the Browns, if I'm signing up for that, because I think these last two games showed you that it's still the same Sam Darnold as before. And if you're going to do a reclamation project, Eric, to me, it's like, why not try a different reclamation project? Like, give me like Daniel Jones or something, if that's the route you're going to go, like somebody that might still have some potential. I think the ship is officially sailed on, and not maybe not sailed, because he'll still get some jobs in this league somewhere. But I just think like, it was kind of like the end of Scooby-Doo where they take the mask off and you're like, oh, I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for you meddling kids. Like, he almost fooled us. He almost made us think like there's a franchise quarterback in there. But then we realized, no, this is still the same guy that was seeing ghosts in New York.
Right. And, you know, and it's hard for these guys. I mean, when you look at these quarterbacks that may be available for the Browns, they all are who they are, right?
Yeah.
They throw interceptions. They do silly things in the games that cost them victories. And so it's going to be tough. I think we need someone, like you said, a Daniel Jones, but I need someone who can come in there and manage the offense. I think we need to go back to Stefanski's offense, especially if we're not going to draft a quarterback in the first round. We need to go back to Stefanski's offense, three tight ends, line up, and run the damn ball. And if we run the damn ball, then we don't have to worry about this guy having as many opportunities to throw interceptions because we're running the ball successfully. And so that's what I want to see. I want that to be implemented. First and foremost, I've said it time in and time out, we need to be a running team first. We need to We step off the bus, they need to be trying to line nine in the box because they know we're going to run the ball. And that's what we haven't done over the course of the last couple of years. And last 2 years, two seasons ago, we were successful because we were throwing the ball over the yard. But last year, we couldn't do either, and so it made it hard.
Yeah, no, I do think that is kind of the sense that I got at the end of season press conferences for both Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, was that these two guys feel inclined to, we got to get back to finding our identity on offense. And we know what that was. We know it was successful since Kevin Stefanski's been here. So I do think there's kind of this pivot going on back to what worked in previous years, that Kevin Stefanski offense. And I do think this sort of segues nicely into the next conversation I want to have, Eric, because there have been a handful of candidates who have come in and interviewed for the offensive coordinator vacancy. Maybe some more to come. I mentioned the Vikings losing. The streets are talking, if you will, that Josh McCown might be somebody that they look to interview. He was obviously with the Vikings this past year. So we'll see if that comes to fruition. So that's sixth interview. But the five guys who have interviewed for the job so far include Tommy Rees, who's currently with the organization as the tight end coach, Daryl Bevel, former OC in a couple of different spots, and he was most recently the Dolphins quarterback coach this past year, and has some history with Kevin Stefanski from their time in Minnesota, where he was an offensive coordinator when Stefanski was kind of coming up the ranks. Charles London, who's the Seahawks quarterback coach. Kevin Koger, who's the Falcons tight end coach. Neither of those gentlemen have play calling or offensive coordinator experience at this point. Granted, neither does Tommy Rees at the NFL level. He's done it in college. And then the one that intrigues me the most is actually Clint Kubiak, who was most recently, he was the Saints offensive coordinator this past year, but bounced around the league quite a bit. You obviously, fans, I'm sure, are also aware of his dad's name, Gary Kubiak. And the reason I think that feels like the one that is the best fit, at least of the guys that I've interviewed so far, is because the Gary Kubiak offense is basically like it's the lineage of the offense that Kevin Stefanski likes to run. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Shanahan, you mentioned Sean McVay, same sort of thing.
Yes.
But it's the same offense. Kevin Stefanski is basically an offshoot of that, similar to those guys as well. And Clint has been around that system his entire life. He worked with Kevin Stefanski as a quarterback coach and did some work with him sort of mapping out the offense when Kevin Stefanski was the OC in Minnesota. They worked together. So this, to me, Eric, and the reason I like this sort of pairing the most is because A, it's the familiarity with the scheme, like I said, but B, I also think like Clint could call the plays if you needed him to, and it would still be like the offense that you're looking to run and give you that identity that you're looking for. And then C, I think like Stefanski having somebody who can, and I'm not saying he's like hard to work with, but I do think like having somebody who can like bring ideas to the table and they can kind of bounce off each other. And sometimes like Clint might say, hey, I think this is a better idea, and sort of like push back on certain calls or be able to like interject with certain things. Like I think Stefanski would trust Kubiak with some of that and sort of having sort of this back and forth. And I'm not saying that doesn't happen with other guys. Stefanski's always said they're very collaborative. But I do think having somebody who's so familiar with the offense allows for that a little bit more, and who he has a good relationship with.
So you feel like he needs somebody with a little cachet. Because then,
yeah,
he'll listen.
Then he'll listen
to them, right?
And, yeah.
And so with all this, with all that you said, I think we're assuming, I know I am, that Stefanski is going to call plays again next year.
I am, yeah.
We're both assuming that, right?
What I'll say, Eric, so from what I've sort of heard from inside the locker room, guys on that team prefer Kevin Stefanski calling the plays too. So I do think that's probably part of this equation. But yes, I think that's a fair assumption to make that he will take those responsibilities back in 2025.
And I think they want that to happen because they know what they're going to get if he calls his plays. And so what you've said about Clint Kubiak, let's bring him in right now because they have a familiarity with each other. They can go out there and run the type of offense that they want to run and just try to make it better. They can get people to fit their system. And we can, like I said, we can go back to three tight ends running the ball and establishing the run game so you can play action passing. So I'm looking forward to that. We just got to make this happen because I think Stefanski is going to call the plays. You do, yeah, as well. And so right now, I think with that in mind, we don't have to get a quarterback at two. You know, we can get somebody later on and who can end up being a star if we build a team right around him.
I like that you brought this full circle back to the quarterback conversation. That's awesome. Yeah. But yeah, I think you're right. Like, if Stefanski's calling the plays, having somebody who has, because listen, no matter all these candidates that are out there, I think he's still calling the plays no matter what. Bevel's the one who was like, that guy was kind of a mentor to him, so maybe he would consider passing it off to him. But I still think it'd be, you know, more so like he's calling the plays and Bevel's just there sort of for support. But the other three, with Reese, with Koger, with London, like those guys don't really have the play calling experience at the NFL level. So I think it would be Stefanski kind of calling the plays and those guys kind of serving as like, you know, the right-hand man. But I think in Kubiak's case, because he has such an intricate understanding of this offense, it allows for like more ideas and like more understanding of like the nuance of how they want to do things, where he can bring different ideas to the table and it might actually stick and it might actually work and it might be something that Stefanski's receptive to. So I just think that's something that's valuable in who they want in this position.
Right. And because, I mean, somebody needs to be able to explain the wins and whys you're calling certain plays. And right. And as a head coach calling plays, you might not see everything because you might also be thinking about, if I do this, I got to throw the defense out there and so forth. Where an offensive coordinator who's actually calling plays doesn't have to think about that. He's just calling plays. Yeah. And so he's thinking about the offense that's on the field and trying to move the ball. And so while he's the offensive coordinator and Kevin Stefanski is calling plays, he can still say, you might try to think about this because this is what they've been doing on third and 7-10. And so this play right here gives us a chance to beat them, whereas Stefanski, being a head coach, might look at it at it differently because he has to protect his defense as well.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say, too, to sort of put a bow on this part of the conversation, Eric, is like if they – like the other guys it feels like are kind of going to be kind of learning on the fly. Like Tommy Reese, Koger, London, like all those guys are kind of be like, all right, I'm learning how to be a play caller in real time and how to be an offensive coordinator in real time. Not that they can't do it, but like with Clint, you know, with Clint Kubiak, you don't have to worry about that. It's basically like bring him in. He knows what he's doing. He serves in a supporting role, and he can be there constantly to help Stefanski. I also will say this. It sounds like Mike Vrabel, who just got hired by the Patriots, might be considering poaching Tommy Reese from the Browns to be his offensive coordinator. So we'll see if that comes to fruition or not as well. Final thing I wanted to talk about today, Eric, is we talked so much about the draft. We talked so much about needs that this team has. I think we know quarterback is the biggest one. But if we're taking quarterback out of the equation, what is the thing that you think the Browns, like give me like a top three in terms of like positions or needs that this team has that they should be looking to address in the draft or just this offseason in general?
Left tackle.
Okay.
Not necessarily in order, right?
Yeah, just what I don't need it in order. I'm not going to you're not beholden to one, two, or three.
Left tackle, running back, edge.
Okay. I like those. I like those answers.
What do you got?
I think left tackle is probably, again, aside from quarterback, if we're taking that out of the equation, I think left tackle has to be number one because Jed Wills was a disaster. I don't think they're bringing him back. And we know how important that position is. And again, with this offensive line, you might have another hole to fill with Joel Bitonio. Maybe you can sort of patchwork that for a year, but left tackle is such an important spot. I actually think, and I thought about this more and more, I think edge might be like my number two answer because they need to get away from doing this Renna pass rusher next to like opposite of Myles Garrett. If they could get a young guy to sort of pair with him, and that also sets you up where like, say things don't go well this season and Myles Garrett's like, you know what, I want out. Okay, now you got like a young pass rusher kind of waiting in the wings that can be the next Miles, maybe not quite Myles Garrett, but can be the next, you know, great pass rusher for you. And I'm gonna tell you, man, after watching that Penn State Notre Dame game last week, I would love Abdul Carter for this team. I just got to throw that out there. And then I'm also keeping an eye on linebacker because we don't know the status of Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. And if he's maybe done, like if his career is over, which, you know, there's been some ominous signs that could be true just based off of what the team isn't saying about it. That might become a need really, really quickly for this team because they thought he was going to be a guy they built around that defense for years to come. And that might not be the case anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's tough. And I like your decision. I mean, we had two were the same.
Yeah.
Two were the same. And so, yeah, I feel good about what you said as well.
How do you feel about Abdul Carter? You like Abdul Carter?
Well, I like him. When it's all said and done, we don't have any say. We just have to watch and see what these guys do and decide what's best for this team. We just have to hope that they do what we think is right.
Well, you might have more pull than me, Eric. I mean, they got you coming and doing the guitar smash. You at least you're around the organization. So if you ever get a chance, I'm just saying, just put Abdul Carter in Andrew Berry's ear if you get a chance to tell him. So
if I get a chance, I'll do that. I'll do that. But I'm gonna go with Kelvin Banks first.
That's fair. Yeah. Okay. Well, here's what we'll do. They'll trade back. They'll take Kelvin Banks. They'll take Abdul Carter. Hopefully, he's still there. Whatever pick they end up with as their second pick. And then, that's how they'll sort of set that up. So I like that. I like that option. All right, guys, that's going to do it for another episode of the Dog Check Podcast, part of the Bleav Network of Podcasts and also airing weekly on a television set near you across the great state of Ohio. As always, we are brought to you by Bet Online. Appreciate you stopping on by. We're in full off-season mode here at the Dog Check Podcast and, of course, just with the Cleveland Browns in general. But looking forward to what lies ahead for this Cleveland Browns team as they look to revamp and rebuild this roster going into 2025. For Eric Metcalf, I'm Spencer German. We'll talk to you again soon. Have a good week and go Browns.
Go Browns.